As we left off the previous year, we're discussing a very cryptic brisa about the status of Eretz Yisrael in a boat. The question is, what does that mean? Where is this boat coming from exactly? So the Gemara thought that we're referring to the boats and the rivers of Eretz Yisrael, and then we start talking about dirt in the boats, and the dirt is connected to the bottom of the river, not connected to the bottom of the river. And finally, the Gemara says that literally, no pun intended, I'm not even Mr. Boat. This is not the right kind of rice. The rice is not even talking about boats in Eretz Yisrael. But the rice is talking about something totally different. Let's take a look at the Chesem and Aleph. It's five lines from the top. About the river status of Eretz Yisrael, nobody argues. Nobody's going to say that, well, you're in a river, you're not really in Eretz Yisrael. That's not even the issue. So what did the Braisa mean when it talked about the water, about the boats? It wasn't talking about Eretz Yisrael proper. Rather, what it was talking about was Ella Tupligi, The machlokes was not about rivers in Eretz Yisrael proper. Rather, the machlokes was about certain parts of the water, as we'll see as we go on, certain islands off the coast of Eretz Yisrael. Where exactly is the line drawn for the gvul of the western side? Remember back in the Mishnah, we said that was the easiest part. We had trouble identifying Akko and Rekem and all those other cities. But the West, it's the shadow. The West is you hit the Mediterranean, so you've got to Eretz Yisrael. Well, not so simple. So the Braisa tells us the following. Keep leaving, I'm going to go. This is Saturday. Look at the Braisa. Ezu Eretz, the Ezu Chuslo Eretz. Which part is considered to be Eretz Yisrael proper? All the ramifications thereof. What's considered to be Chuslo Eretz? So here the Braisa is focusing, at least the beginning of the Braisa, on the northernmost part of Eretz Yisrael. So the northernmost part of Eretz Yisrael is actually the Gvul. But the Gvul is on a mountain. Now, it's on a mountain. It's not clear where on that mountain is considered to be the line of demarcation. It says the Braisa, Kosher Shofeb Yoreh between Amnon V'Lefnim Eretz Yisrael. So literally the tippy top of the mountain is the border. So anything that goes down in the direction of Eretz Yisrael towards the south is considered to be part of Eretz Yisrael. Between Amnon V'Lechutz, anything which is from this mountaintop, between Amnon and going out to Eretz Yisrael is considered to be Chutz L'Oretz. So if you would ask somebody, where's the border is the mountaintop. You ask the next question, well, is the mountain in the Gvul? So the answer is, it depends. The southern part of the slope is in the Gvul. The northern part of the slope is not in the Gvul. But this part of the Braisa was really just the introduction. Now we get to the punchline of our discussion. What about Hanas and Shebayam? What if you have some islands, very, very small little bodies of land off the coast of Eretz Yisrael? Are they considered to be part of Eretz Yisrael or not? Do we say that the minute that you step foot into the Mediterranean, you're going swimming on the Ashdod beach, you're already going to Chutz L'Oretz? Is that really true? Is the border literally at the water? So the Braisa continues, Anas Shebayam. Ro and Osan, we view them as follows. Ki'ilu chut masuach aleihem, mitiri amnon ad nacha mitzrayim. So you draw almost like a street. If it's possible just to mute, whoever's not muted, it's just this background noise coming. So whoever's not muted, if it's possible. You draw an imaginary line, an imaginary string from Turi Amnon, from the northernmost part, and Nacham Yisrael, until the southernmost part. Now we know that phrase, Nacham Yisrael, that actually appears in the Chumash. Nacham Yisrael. It's very unclear where that Nacham Yisrael is. There are many, many different opinions. It was Machlokes back in the early days already, hundreds of years ago, which body of water exactly is Nacham Yisrael. Some wadi, one name for some wadi in the Sinai Desert is in the upper Sinai, is simply one possibility. Others put it a little bit higher, others put it a little bit lower. It's not 100% clear where this Nacham Yisrael is. But wherever it is, if you draw literally pull a string, an imaginary string, from the northernmost point to the southernmost point. So if you remember what the coast next door looks like, so it kind of it curves a little bit. So that string, the direct line, it's almost like the hypotenuse of the triangle, is going to involve some of the water. It's going to include some of the water. So there's going to be some parts of the Mediterranean that are going to be to the east of that strait. So what it happens to be some little islands in that small pocket of area off the coast. So that's what the Braisa tells us with a chutzlof min Eretz Yisrael. Whatever is innermost toward that strait, whatever is closer to Eretz Yisrael proper, is considered a lachlof to be part of Eretz Yisrael. Anything that is outside is considered, is treated as chutz laretz. So you have this small area, small pocket of water, which may have an island. I don't know the geography there well, but there may be some islands in that small area that could potentially have the status of Eretz Yisrael. So when you go swimming next time off the beach, you're like, no, don't swim, you're not going to swim. You're still within the borders of Eretz Yisrael, even though you're technically in the water ground. So Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yehuda had a little bit of a different way of evaluating the coastline of Eretz Yisrael. Kol shekeneged Eretz Yisrael around Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Yehuda said, no, that you don't draw this imaginary string, this diagonal, and then just include this couple of miles of water and islands. Rather, whatever is literally parallel to Eretz Yisrael, whatever is, you're standing in Tel Aviv and you walk into the water. And you keep on going, you keep on going, keep on going. As long as you're connected Tel Aviv, as long as you're connected Ashdod, as long as you're connected Haifa, so you're in the water or the islands connected, corresponding to that area, you are still technically in Eretz Yisrael. So whereas, according to the first view, you drew this imaginary string, this hypotenuse, and oh, that small pocket of Eretz Yisrael, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you keep on going. We're going to find out in a moment where does it stop. If you keep on going long enough, you're going to hit California. So let's wait and see where that line is going to stop. So how did Rabbi Yehuda know that you're well into the Mediterranean and you're still considered to be part of Eretz Yisrael? The pasuk in Parshas Maaseh, which delineates all the borders, when it comes to the western border, it says a lot. It says, this is the western border and the water is the border, and this is the border, and it says about four times the word gvul. It's a reboot coming to include that even though you're technically past the shoreline, past the coast, Kozban, that you're still corresponding to Eretz Yisrael, so you're still technically part of Eretz Yisrael. So now Rabbi Yehuda's view, I didn't say we follow yet, but Rabbi Yehuda's view, where does that place those little islands? So Rodosan, we view them as follows. We also draw strings, but a very, very different string Rabbi Yehuda draws. We take one string and we make a straight line. We're not drawing an hypotenuse anymore. Straight line. Mikafloria v'yadyamu kainis. We draw a string from Kafloria. Kafloria was on that mountain. The mountain we mentioned before that was the northernmost border. So this is the northernmost border of Eretz Yisrael. We simply draw a line. Straight line. We keep on going. Ad ukainus. Okinus means literally the ocean. Does it mean the Atlantic Ocean? It's not exactly clear what the term Okinus clearly is related to the word ocean, but we're not exactly sure how far Chazal meant with that statement. And then we draw another line from Nachal Mitzrayim, which is the southernmost part, and we keep on going. Anything in that water space between the two is considered to be Eretz Yisrael.
Is that a triangle?
It's not, it's really two parallel lines. According to the first view of the Rabbanan, there's almost like that hypotenuse that was drawn, and anything in that small eastern pocket is Eretz Yisrael. According to Amuda, there are two parallel lines that are drawn, one from the tippy top, one from the bottom, and you keep on going. Now you look at that image, and anything in the water, in the Mediterranean, within those lines, it could be 500 miles out into the Mediterranean, that halachically is batel to Eretz Yisrael, it's considered to be Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara goes to question the view of the Chachamim. What did the Rabbanan do with that pasuk that Rabbi Yehuda quoted? Rabbi Yehuda quoted a source and took him for this idea. What did they do with that pasuk? So the Rabbanan said, no, that pasuk is the source for our islands, for those very, very small islands hugging the coastline. That pasuk is not a source to extend this out to thousands of miles. Rabbi Huda Naslo Sichik. Rabbi Huda says, no, the Rabbanan's sheet is so obvious, I don't even need a pasuk for that. If there's an extra pasuk, the pasuk is teaching me to draw these two parallel lines. So it comes out, Machlekes HaTanoim, just how far Eretz Yisrael protrudes in the west. Everybody agrees it doesn't end literally by the Tel Aviv beach. Everyone agrees you get a little bit of nautical miles out. I'm not thinking of Lahavla, I think international law, but 12 nautical miles. I'm not sure what nautical mile means, but the 12 nautical miles is technically territorial waters, if I'm not mistaken. I think past that point, you can say international water. So Lahavla and Halacha also, there's such a principle that certain distance off the coastline is still halachic, it's going to be part of Eretz Yisrael. According to the Rabban, it's a relatively small area. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it goes, and it goes. And it's unclear where it ends. So it is so unclear where it ends that if you take a very, very quick look on the Tosas, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Shaul Rabbeinu, we mentioned this before, there's a Balei Tosas, Pei Tes Reish. It's not clear how to pronounce his name. In the yeshivas, they pronounce it Rabbeinu Peter. Probably correct pronunciation was Rabbeinu Peter. It's a non-Jewish name, like a lot of people have non-Jewish names. So Shaul Rabbeinu Peter, the Rabbeinu Tam, it was the Talmud of Rabbeinu Tam. Says Rabbeinu Peter to Rabbeinu Tam, we should be chayv in Shumas and Meisers. You know why? Just keep the lines going, and you bump right into France. Now, again, we can't blame, can't hold the Balei Tosfos accountable to the maps that they had. It's not exactly true that if you draw a straight line from Israel, you don't end up in France. You end up closer to Spain. But the question is still there. So whether or not Rabbeinu Tam was literally within those two lines doesn't really matter. But the question is a very, very valid question. We can actually continue the question a little bit. If you continue those lines, you will bump into South Carolina eventually. And if you keep on going, you will bump into L.A. If you take a look at the map, L.A. is on the same latitude as Eretz Yisrael. And so the many of the Zman Hayom are actually pretty similar to Eretz Yisrael because of that. So does it end ever? So it's a whole loaded. So yeah, but kids and kids and nimrods, the basic assumption of Rishonim is it does end. You know where it ends? It ends when you hit land, literal land. The whole discussion is about Nas and Shemayam. It's about little islands. It's not a little deserted island here, or a little island. You hit a continent. That's a Tosfos quotes an idea. You hit an entire continent. You're in Europe. You're in America. You're in America. So that's the largest world. And some people like to think that way, but the mice has got to end somewhere. But we could say safely that even in South Carolina, even in California, you're not halachically considered to be an Israel. Just as an aside, we don't even pass the commute in the first place. We pass the commute of the Chachamim that the whole two lines are not even accepted. But even within that, the bottom line, it ends somewhere. Okay, let's continue back to the Gemara. So Rabbi Meir Omer Akin Keretzov Chulin. So in the Mishnah, when we're talking about the different borders of Eretz Yisrael, so the Gemara spoke about that famous city of Akko, where we had a lot of trouble with Akko. Was it here for Eretz Yisrael? Eretz Yisrael consorts. So both the name of Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba. A question was posed to Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba. Hamoche Avdol Suria Kemoche Bechutzvaretz Damui Olam. Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba is making reference to a suga that's actually more in the fourth paragraph than the first paragraph, but it makes a little bit of an appearance here as well. There is a halacha that if a person owns an Eved Kanani, so they are not permitted to sell that Kanani to a master who lives in Chutz Laaretz. For the simple reason, as those were learning the Fiyomi, the Eved Mesechus Ksubis, even an Eved has a right to say, I want to live in Eretz Yisrael. So if you do an avlo to the Eved and you sell him to Chutz Laaretz, those are grounds for him to demand on receiving his freedom. So here the Gemara raised the question, where exactly did you draw the line? What's called Eretz Yisrael for these purposes? The other Gemara is focusing on a particular area, which is going to become very important in the Chesed Beis, called Syria. Obviously, Syria is related to that. Syria is that area directly north of Eretz Yisrael that is quasi-Eretz Yisrael. It's quasi-Eretz Yisrael for the following reason, that it was never really conquered properly. The Pesukim and Sefer Yeshua described that when Kleisel conquered the bulk of Eretz Yisrael, that was done as what we call a Kibbutz Rabbim. It was done under the auspices of Yeshua Benum, the Beis Din, the whole Jewish army, etc. Later in the days of David HaMelech, there were small areas to the north of Eretz Yisrael that were conquered on a personal level by David HaMelech. It wasn't done under the sanction of the Sanhedrin, it wasn't done Kedasu Chadin, and it may have not even been done halachically correctly. There are questions why David HaMelech did it the way that he did, because he hadn't finished Eretz Yisrael proper. You're not really supposed to go outside of Eretz Yisrael to finish Eretz Yisrael itself. And therefore, Syria was endowed with a very, very strange kind of a status. It's called kibbutz yachid. It's an individual kibbutz, not a communal kibbutz. And therefore, it's not quite fully Eretz Yisrael. It has certain aspects of Eretz Yisrael and certain aspects not. So that whole area is up for question. The whole area to the north of Eretz Yisrael, which now, today, is basically parts of Syria. So is that considered to be halachically Eretz Yisrael or not? The Gemara is going to discuss it much more in the Ches of the days, but the other Gemara raises one question. If a person sells their Eved to Syria, is that like Kemochem Chutz La'aretz Dam Yalom? So do we say that that's like you sold him to Chutz La'aretz and therefore he gets his immediate freedom? Otherwise, it's still considered to be a little bit Eretz Yisrael. So Amal Husra, the response was given, Chibar Abba answered, Tini Sur, we learned to that Mishnah. Rabbi Meir Omer Akal Keretz Yisrael L'Gittin. So Rabbi Meir said that Akal was treated to be like Eretz Yisrael for Gittin, but Gittin in Levodim Lo. He was very, very specific in his words that for Gittin, we're going to let you get away with it being part of Eretz Yisrael. It's not really Eretz Yisrael. The emissaries that Akal, Malachli, was not really considered to be part of Eretz Yisrael. But for Gittin, it was so close. People still knew the din of Lishma. People still recognize signatures. All the reasons that led us to say the funny Nechta in the first place. So we're going to give Akko a green light. But not for Avodim. If you sell your Eved to Akko, the game's over. The Eved goes free. The Kosher King, Syria, the Mechot Tuva. Akko's not so far from Eretz Yisrael. It's right over the border. Syria is 50 miles to the north. So if you sell your Eved, next time you sell your Eved to Damascus, so you're going to lose your Eved. That's the bottom line is that for these purposes, we treat Syria as Chutzlars. Because the Gemara down a little bit into the discussion about Syria, we now quote the Braisa that teaches us anything and everything we wanted to know about that unique area of the north of Eretz Yisrael. So Tana Rabbanan, v'shlosha drachim shivsa Syria Yitzol, v'shlosha l'chutz la'aretz. There are three different areas of Halacha that Syria is treated like Eretz Yisrael, and three like chutz la'aretz. So here we have Simon, but that we were talking about the Gemara, that we just put in a little bit later as a mnemonic device to remember what the six cases are. So the first case was Afra Tomei Kechutz La'aretz. That the Afra, the dirt of Syria, is considered to be Tomei like the dirt of Chutz La'aretz. Something that we mentioned earlier this week, that Midrabbanon, a decree was made that if you come to Chutz La'aretz, you automatically become Tomei, because it wasn't clear where all the Mason was. Some of the Mason had been from the Mabul left over, and other people weren't burying the Mason properly. So you never know which place is standing in a cemetery. So therefore, Midrabbanon, they declared anyone who comes to Chutz La'aretz automatically considered to be Tomei Mace, which we mentioned on Monday, opens up a very, very serious question for Kohan, and what right do they have to live in Chutz La'aretz? So there's some answer to that question. But the question is posed and has to be discussed, not in that context right now. It's a real question in Shulchan Aruch, what the heck of that is. But comes this Braish and says that the offer of Syria is considered to be like the offer of Chutz La'aretz, and you tell me if you're going there as well. Like we said before, if you sell your Eved to Syria, that's tantamount to selling to Chutz La'aretz. But maybe get me Syria, can maybe Chutz La'aretz. But if a person brings a get from Syria, that's like bringing a get from Chutz La'aretz. So for these three areas of Halacha, for Hilchas Tuba, for Hilchas Avodim, for Hilchas Gittin, so yes, Syria is considered by Chutz La'aretz. But the Braisa contrasts. B'shlosh La'aretz Yisrael, in three ways, it's considered to be Sibyl Eretz Yisrael. Chayevus b'maiser b'shvias Eretz Yisrael. The halachas of maiser, students of maiser apply. The halachas of shvias, that's one unit really. The mitzvah plus bar apply. The Gemara is going to explain a little bit later. They only apply with the rabbanon. They don't apply with the Torah, but they do apply with the rabbanon. It is considered to be to some degree Eretz Yisrael. The rotzi likanis b'tahara nichnas. If a person wants to enter into Syria and still remain in the state of tahara, he can't do so. Now, this law in the Braisa seems to be an outright contradiction to what we said before. The first part of the Braisa, we said, Syria is like Chutz La'aretz, it's going to be these halachas. So if you notice that the Braisa is very, very vague. The Braisa doesn't say, you are Tahor. It just says, if you want to come in and remain Tahor, we have a suggestion for you to be explained a little bit later. So the Gemara is going to explain that the Braisa was not retracting what we said before. Of course, Syria is like Chutz La'aretz. But there's a unique kula, there is a leniency that Syria has, that Chutz La'aretz doesn't have. So if a person wants to avail themselves of that leniency, there is a way to do it. The Gemara is going to explain what that is. And the third area that Syria is like Eretz Yisrael, the konas sadeh b'Syria, the konas b'pavar Yerushalayim. If a person buys a field in Syria, it's considered to be like he bought it literally in the suburbs of Yerushalayim. Now, what is the halachic significance of that? The Gemara is going to explain a little bit later. The Gemara did not say that the price is going to be the same. probably the price would be a little bit better up in Damascus than it is, you know, in Rehavia. But even close to halachically, it's still considered to be the same.
Again, the Mishnah
Shri
said there's a distinction about
the Kibush Eretz Yisrael
from the Yehoshua and Ezra.
Yeah, so Syria is a funny thing, because Syria did have Kibush Rishon, but it had Kibush Rishon, Kibush Rishon. So Syria is Mishrish and Mishadi. It's a little bit of a funny of a hybrid in terms of that. So even the difference concerning Shemitah between Kibush Rishon and Mishadi doesn't mean Shemitah doesn't apply entirely. Some of the halachas of Sfichin perhaps don't apply there. Some other kuvas don't apply there. They're beyond them right now. So, but Kuri is its own unique category in halacha. For us, it's not too relevant. Most isn't all that much fruit and vegetables coming from Damascus these days there in Israel. But in theory, it could be an important discussion. So now the Gemara goes on to explain each one of these lines in the price. So Chayyab is for Maisa Vishriyas. Eretz Yisrael, why is it obligated in Trumas and Ma'is, just like Eretz Yisrael? Kasava Kibush Yachid Shmei Kibush. So this rice is of the opinion that Kibush that was done by an individual, even as prestigious an individual as David HaMelech, but he was still acting basically as an individual. So that does take on the status of a Kibush that's considered to be like conquering Eretz Yisrael. And according to this rice, at least, there is no difference. Now, there are other sugyas, primarily in the fourth paragraph of Maseches Gittin in other places, that question is, and they're of the opinion that Kibush Yochid is lav shmei kibush, and therefore the din of Trumas and Maaseres may not really apply, may only apply on a level of derabbanan. So it is a loaded topic, but for our purposes, this particular braisa is siding with that opinion that Kibush Yochid is considered to be a proper kibush. That which the braisa said, that if you want to go in the state of purity, if you do so, yes, the Gemara, the obvious question, Babar's Alpha Tommy, you just told me a minute ago that the dirt is tummy. We have to decide, is it tummy, is it not tummy? The answer to the Gemara, the Bryson never said you are tar all the time. What the Bryson meant is the Shiga Teva Omigdo. If you decide to go in a box, and we mentioned this the other day, that this is the background for the airplanes. It took about 2,000 years for science to catch up with the Gemara. But the Gemara says if a person wants to go into a Surya completely enclosed in a box, then he has an option to do so, unlike in Chutz La'aretz proper. So we'll guess, put this into a practical term for us. If a person flies over Chutz La'aretz proper, you would become tough, but you need to get out of the plane. Whereas if you simply flew over Surya, that would not make you tough. So the distinction that the Bryce is drawing between if you literally if you step foot into Syria, you become tummy. If you fly over Syria, you're thrown in a box, suspended in the air over Syria, you do not become tummy. What is this based on? What kind of game is this? I'm in a box, not in a box. I am coming, I'm going, coming and going. So this is a very, very important question, which has very serious ramifications for Kohanim today. It's based on the next couple of lines that are going to be the source of Kohanim flying over cemeteries, which is some of you may remember Eretz Yisrael was a big issue several years ago when they were rerouting some of their flight plans, and then there was a whole tumult about that. And this has a very, very serious repercussions for Kohanim driving under trees. There are those, anyone here from Kibron Hills, or in the background of Kibron Hills. So there's a whole portion of Main Street in Kibron Hills that goes directly adjacent to a Jewish cemetery. And there are trees going over, and they're very, very serious shiloh where the Kohen is permitted to go down that area. There are places in Brooklyn where you get off the prospect. There are places which you go, service road goes directly next to cemeteries. There are a whole array of places that run into the shiloh. Can a Kohen be in a box, in this case a car, in the state in the sense of the basic cars, or adjacent to the basic cars? So this Gemara is very, very serious.
Nowadays, after the Kibush Haaretz by the Romans, why would we assume that Eretz Yisrael is different than Chutz La'aretz?
Oh, excellent. Very good. Excellent question. So the overwhelming majority of Rishonim assume that Kibush Shein, not even really Kibush, the Kedusha Shmiya is not this batla.
It's not Kedusha. It's about where dead people are buried.
No. I'm not... Yeah, I think we're asking about the mitzvah of Baruch, about Shemitah, I said, no, about this. You're right. So this takana that was made, it was a special takana's basin that was made called Tumas Eretz Amim. So that takana of Tumas Eretz Amim, whether the reason applies, doesn't apply, The Maisa Takanas, most other Takanas comes remain in force until they're actually repealed, and we don't usually have a mechanism to repeal Takanas with Banazet. So the bottom line is it's been Israel. It's not relevant with Banazet at all. It doesn't make a size bit of difference. Well, the Kohan, everyone's talking anyway. So the Kohan's. Well, that's the question you explained. You was about to explain. What?
It's the other way. The Torah of
Kohan. Oh, we should now make it to also Tommy. So good question. So the answer is Eretz Yisrael still is with Kedusha today. Eretz Yisrael is still.
It's not a Kedusha.
Okay, so means the fact that Goyim lived there for 2,000 years, so they buried the basic right. But we are not obligated to make new takanos. Means we have enough issues keeping the gezeiros that were made 1,700, 1,800, 2,000 years ago. We are not in the business of making new takanos. We don't have a based mechanism to make new takanos today. So you're right. There would be a Sanhedrin today. But they sit around and they say that, well, now they're amazing veterans. So let's make it the Kodom. I don't know. The Gemara says that Chazal were very, very weary to declare Tumah in Eretz Yisrael. There are certain kulas they invoked in Eretz Yisrael because they didn't want to have the situation that we're going to have parts of Eretz Yisrael off limits for people. That's a disaster. So the last thing we want to do is add Tumah to Eretz Yisrael. We have enough trouble with the Tumah in Chutzal. We'll keep the Tumah Eretz Yisrael here. So the question is, what does this mean, Brackley? The sign we learned in the Braisa. Hanifas Eretz Yisrael, a person goes into Chutzal. Shida Teva Umigdal. He's in a box or a movable kind of a closet or whatever, different kinds of containers. Rebbe Mitame Rabbi Yosef Rida Mitaher. Rabbi Yudah Nosri, Rebbe was of the opinion that the person is Tameh, and Rabbi Yosef Rida was of the opinion that the person is Tameh. What is the issue? The Gemara explains in other places, this is a term that's called Ohel Zoruk. Ohel Zoruk Shmei Ohel, Ohel Zoruk La Shmei Ohel. The basic halacha is that. Let's say a person is in a cemetery, but they're totally enclosed in a container. They're totally sealed up, so there's no connection whatsoever. So then the halacha is the tumah technically doesn't spread. Consider it based on the unique halachas of that container. Believe it or not, I had a shaila yesterday about this. A fellow came to ask me yesterday that somebody asked him a shaila that this fellow's in medical school. And he does occasionally brings home bones from his anatomy lab, whether he should or should not be, I don't know, but that's what he does. So he brings home some bones for, I guess, does his homework, and he happens not to be a Kohen. He lives in an apartment building where there are some Kohanim. And he asked the question, can he leave these bones in his apartment? Because even if the doors of the apartment are closed, there's what we call sof tumah latzeh, the tumah is going to, eventually it's going to be taken out, and that gufa spreads tumah. The question was posed to me was, can he enclose these bones in something in a way that will prevent the tumor from spreading? So I did not tell him to put him to a plane in his apartment, but that's basically this sugya. Now, what kind of a container can be used to prevent tumor from spreading? So in this discussion, the Tanoim were discussing something that's going to be moving. It's what we call an Ohel Zoruk. So according to the view of Rebbe, an Ohel Zoruk doesn't do the trick. If it's something that's moving, it doesn't stop the tumor, which of course spells disaster for planes and for cars, etc. And Rabbi Yosef Yehuda said it's okay. So therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, you cannot just be thrown in a box over chutzlars. The box is not going to help you. But Rabbi Rabbi Lokamitam even Rabbi, the biggest machmer in the airplanes, in the boxes, the flying boxes, was only machmer in chutzlars proper to gozu al gusha bi alavira. Because when Chazal made the gezeira against chutzlars, they said that the gush means a clump. The gush itself means a clump of dirt. So the gezeira was made on the gush, on the dirt, the alavira, and on the airspace of Chutz La'aretz as well. About Syria, when it came to Syria, al gush goes all avira goes. They were much more lenient about Syria, because let's not forget, Syria says a little bit of Chutz La'aretz as well. So they toned down the gezeira a little bit. And therefore, they said that the gezeira doesn't apply to the avir, to the air of Syria. So the bottom line is, even if you hold that Ohel Zoruk doesn't help you, that doesn't help you in chutzlah, it's proper, but it will help you in Eretz Yisrael. So again, it's a little bit of a fine line of distinction. Obviously, for us, it's not all that relevant, but that was what the Chan of Rice was. Then the Gemara continues, Ve'akona sadeh b'suri k'kona p'rabi yishalayim. If a person buys a field in Syria, it's as if they bought the field literally in the suburbs of Yerushalayim. What is the halachic significance of that statement? So Amar of Sheish is Lomash of Kozmav own of a field of Shabbos. That if you want to buy a field from a non-Jew in Yerushalayim, or even in Syria for that matter, You can write the documents even on Shabbos. It's so important to buy the land to get away from the non-Jews that you can do it even on Shabbos. The West says, Shabbos on the day? Are you joking? Chil Shabbos. Buying land is important, but Chil Shabbos. So can you have a Rava? What it means is you can ask a non-Jew to sign the documents for you. He can be your lawyer. He can sign the shtaros for you. Even though normally to ask a non-Jew to do something for you on Shabbos is prohibited, that's an issa b'drabban. The Chachamim never made the gezeira because of issa b'drabban. It's so important to get the land away from the non-Jews that we're going to let you violate what would otherwise be an issa b'drabban. Very, very quick story for davening. Halach l'maisa application of the sugya. It goes back to the 1920s or so when the British were in control of Eretz Yisrael. So they used to run these land auctions to try to pay on the land. They were making $2 a few shillings and pounds off of it. So we organized this auction. So at different times in the British days in Eretz Yisrael, they didn't always have the best relationship with the Jewish community. And at one point, they decided to make some big auction in a way that they were pretty sure no Jews would show up to buy the land. They scheduled it for Yom Kippur. So that was their smart aleck approach. So it came to Rav Kook, the older Rav Kook back in the 20s, came to Rav Kook's attention that this land auction was being scheduled for Yom Kippur Dafka to circumvent the Jews buying it. So he instructed somebody to find a non-Jewish driver, I guess the dog, and to drive him to the auction on Yom Kippur to bid for the land and to have the non-Jew sign whatever documents was necessary. Fulfillment of this Allah. So the British, they were smart, but they went too smart. They didn't get that chesed, they learned that the shoes that didn't make the chesed. They didn't chop that you can violate a mil yakam in order to purchase land. So that's the show. Yeah. 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 I was told that somebody told me that in Shalabim after 1948,